o'clock, so I'm calling the meeting of the Citizens Police Review Board to order. As we traditionally do, we're going to start with introductions, but I thought we'd start with Stephanie this time and just move around the table in another direction.
Shake it up.
Yeah.
Stephanie Brown, Special Projects Manager and Staff Liaison.
Peyton Oliver, City Management Fellow.
Earl Krause, City Law Department.
Steve Jeffrey, Vice Chair.
Doug Hunt, Chair.
Ed Robinson, Board Member.
Lynn Bergen, Member.
Harry Castillo, Board Member.
Steph Yocum, Human Rights Commission.
Demarcus Thomas Brown, Administrator for the Office of Violence Prevention here at the City of Columbia.
I'm Richard Correll, Assistant Chief at Columbia Police Department.
Thank you. Do I have a motion to approve the agenda of this meeting?
I'll make a second.
Okay. Oh, wow. I think Stephen beat you to it, and I think you seconded, as it turns out, Steph. So moved and seconded to approve the agenda. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? And similarly, the approval of the minutes, which everybody should have had a chance to look at. Do I have a motion to approve the minutes?
I'll make a motion.
I'll second. Jeffrey.
All right. It's been moved and seconded to approve the minutes of the September 10 meeting. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Okay, good. Looks like our old business is not, there is none this morning, or this afternoon. So we're going to move on to new business, which I'm really looking forward to, which is the presentation that Demarcus Thomas Brown is going to give us. When did you actually start, Demarcus? What was your first day?
March 31st of this year.
All right. Our relatively new violence prevention administrator. And Demarcus, I think I don't doubt that board members are going to have some questions and things like that they want to discuss with you, but I think the best thing to do, as I mentioned to you in the email, is just for you to begin and talk about the work of the office and explain what it's all about and what your perspective on it is. So,
for sure. And I appreciate the invite, Doug. And I'll just go through. And then if there's any questions, I don't know how the format is here. If there's any questions, I'm open to answering any questions that come after the initial presentation. So I'll try to make this pretty quick for you all. So this introduction for the office, it was established in 2023, and the office aims to coordinate the development, implementation, and evaluation, prevention, intervention, and community enrichment. One of the key things starting out in the office, and this was, you know, they say job descriptions and then other duties assigned as they come up. I think one of the other duties assigned as they come up that was not necessarily spelled out in the position was education and educating the general populace on what violence prevention is. That synonymous terms of prevention and intervention don't exist, that prevention is its own lane, intervention is its own lane, and there's an intermediary of the two basically working together in the right now to one to feed the other. So that was a surprise to have to kind of educate community on these things. And so, but I'm happy to do so. So that came with the office. The other thing I will say with this slide is that, as we see there, it was established in 2023. And so there are a lot of people that could not wait until there was someone appointed in this office. And all the questions from a year and some change came through the floodgates. So actually, it was 2 years, because 23 is 2025. So I was hired March 31st. So 2 years of questions, and they're still coming in. So that was the other aspect to this as well. So I won't read what's there, what I'm tasked with. We'll actually go through that as we go through the presentation, but it's just there just for when I present, just so that people understand what the office is about. Community-oriented system of care we'll talk about. So the Office of Violence Prevention on this slide here just shows we were in Columbia, South Carolina, learning from how they have been able to work with their both their violent crime and their crimes against property and unhoused situations and all that, all those separate things. And what was interesting to hear the deputy chief there explain about their Office of Violence Prevention was that he was their that office and the director there and all that. He was like the quarterback for their team. And I mean, you had different programs that he was working with, from the United Way to their homeless or unhoused, excuse me, outreach to their reentry and recovery outreach. He was the quarterback. Their office was the quarterback that kept everyone connected, and cohesion was working through the Office of Violence Prevention to make sure there was this flywheel of collaboration, if you will. And so this graphic kind of shows that approach to the Office of Violence Prevention. This graphic is not made by me. This is made by the National Institute for Criminal Justice Reform. And so they give us, they house the National Office of Violence Prevention, so they give us all these materials. But as we see there, the trauma-informed, community-oriented system of care, when individuals are asking about the cycle of violence, one of the things I think that is hard to explain is that individuals in that cycle need everything now. And so that community-oriented system of care, meaning we have to have the cohesion in play to be able to do housing and education and workforce development and resources for staying housed, right? So rental assistance, food assistance, all these things, parental assistance, right? So all those things are needed when we're talking about breaking cycles. And so that community-oriented system of care is there, as well as the law enforcement aspect in that. So with focused deterrence, as we'll get into later, that is a major collaboration between law enforcement and the Office of Violence Prevention. So the mission there, and I do like reading these, just because these are key to the office. When we crafted these, it was like we wanted to people to be able to understand and hear about the office as they read the mission. So the mission is to address root causes of violence and to support long-term community health and well-being by focusing on coordinating the development, implementation, and evaluation of prevention, intervention, and community enrichment, and the continued development of programs to sustain coordinated initiatives achieved by collaborating with law enforcement, community-based organizations, government agencies, and other key community stakeholders. I always get the question, so I'll just try to save some of the questions that you may ask. So this is a freebie here. Other community stakeholders are funders, right? Because when we have community-based organizations, a lot of things that undercut their sustainability is funding. And a lot of things that cut the cohesion and collaboration is funding, because you have one organization fighting for the funding that the other organization that they could partner with are also fighting for, and so then that cuts their collaboration. But if we can entice then community stakeholders, those funders, in, so we can cut through some of that built-in divisiveness through even the lens of funding. So the vision is the city vision there, and then the purpose I won't read, but it's, you know, to convene like-minded partnerships. So one of the things I won't do immensely is go to the trauma-informed, the definition of trauma. Monday night at council, I did in depth go into the definition of trauma, what trauma looks like, forlorn future, hypervigilance. It's interesting to me, if you've never struggled with or been involved with the cycles of violence, you really don't know what to look for with those who are involved in that, and with the post-traumatic stress disorder, then you also don't know how to cure it. And so I think what we hear in a lot of chatter is individuals that don't even know what the cycle of violence looks like. And so I'm one that I have hypervigilance, and it's not ADHD. I'm always looking at the door. If you ask police officers, they'll tell you it's a real deal, right? And you're always looking at the door. If someone's walking behind you, you want to see who's walking behind you. You want to see who's moving if you hear noise. And that's, you have people who live in a reality of flight, fight or flight, because of the cycle of violence. So I was in a situation where there was a shooting, a mass shooting. No one got hit by the bullets, but the bullets were going on. People were screaming, people were running and all that. That is still a reality, right, for me as I walk through. And so I recognize these things. And so we recognize that where there is a disease, there needs to be a cure. And we realize that our interventive events or interventive strategies are not the cure, but they're helping to sustain so that we can bring the cure. And so that's why I hinge on that trauma-informed, what happened to you, not what's wrong with you, mentality. And again, I will say that this is, as I said, Monday night, but this is not something I made up. This is literally evidence-based practices that we see the drop in violent crime in different areas, violent encounters, if you will. So I'll go over the methodology, and this is what I use to educate the general populace on the notion of prevention versus intervention, and then what community enrichment looks like. And so the story I use is a train, right? I use a locomotive. My grandfather was a train set builder, which it takes patience to do that. I did not have that. I'm not a frequenter of train building workshops and all that, but my grandfather was. And so the methodology of a train, and so those who have never needed to seek a cure because they are seemingly unaffected by the disease don't understand the illness and lack the ability to discern symptoms from prognosis, and therefore don't readily associate those that exhibit symptoms with a disease that needs a cure. And if left untreated, like cancer, that illness will expand. And that's what I ran into when individuals are like, well, why don't we just arrest everybody who's doing violence? I was like, yeah, it doesn't work that way. It's like, we could arrest everyone that has cancer. That's not actually the way we do that. Now, are there some people that we do need to? Yeah, when we talk about focus deterrence, we'll see that there is that interplay there. But as far as a cycle of violence, root causes of violence, you really can't arrest your way out of those. So the train containing cars, as I explained, has left the station. It left the station a long time ago. And so the proponents of violence left the station many miles ago, with each railroad tie crossing being an incident caused by those proponents. As we've seen Saturday night, one incident alone is too many, right? One incident is just unbearable. And so we can no longer stop the train from leaving the station, but hopefully we can prevent the locomotive from crossing successive ties by attempting to divert, contain, and minimize the effects of the current crossings. That's intervention, right? To slow the train and see how we can potentially divert. That's intervention is we are getting in and hoping to slow each situation and each issue. We are also tasked with slowing the train in order to get us time to hopefully get out in front of the procession to build in measures that will eventually stop the train's progression. And that's prevention. How can we stop this progression? How can we stop the crossings, if you will, that represent situations? How can we stop that? And that's prevention that we look at. And lastly, once the train has been successfully halted, we can then remove the proponents to violence and repurpose the train and the cars for communal use and enjoyment. And that's community enrichment, transformation. How do we transform areas that were known for violent encounters and root causes to violence, and that we could see actually full-scale transformation? That's 15, 20 years that the studies have shown us, the practices have shown us that it takes that long to see transformation, but we can start that and see buy-off in 4 or 5 years, actually results in 4 or 5 years, excuse me. And so one of the things I show people when I'm talking about this is the High Line. I've been there, New York City, the High Line, beautiful place, beautiful park. It was not always a beautiful park. And I've seen that this may be myth, but 500 deaths are supposedly happened at the High Line, whether somebody got hit by a car, hit by a train, or overdose, or so on and so forth. But what is not a myth is that when they turned this area that was that was no longer used as a train track into a park, they have 8 million visitors a year, and it's the place of enrichment. And so we see transformation. It took a while, but we see transformation, and High Line is part of that proof of transformation, if you will. And so as we say, prevention is 5 to 10 years. It's a long run game. Intervention is 1 to 3 years, so a short run, right in the midst of coordinated rapid responses and efforts of that nature. And then we see the tapestry or both that bring community enrichment. And so some of the examples of that is case management, care coordination, things of that nature. this keeps going back. Core functions, community coordination. That's a huge piece because we have, if everyone's doing the same thing, then we have major gaps and they need to be filled and they need to be enticed, organizations need to be enticed to where we have the problem. Data-informed strategies. I can't say enough about the data that we're able to capture and see the areas that need intervention throughout the city of Columbia and building off of data that has been taken. So one of the council people mentioned the 2014 Mayor's Task Force. So I apprehended some of those individuals that were on the Mayor's Task Force. So they're actually on my advisory committee and also was able to work in some of the efforts that they helped build out for that. And so then that data and the reports that we got from some of the consultants that were called in, then we're able to retain and build off of that data to see long-term sustaining of the programs that were developed there and program development and evaluation. We want to make sure we're evaluating. If we say we're reaching those who are shooting or most likely to be shot, we want to make sure that those who are being getting the care are actually those who fit that demographic. And if they're not, how do we reach them and then support its sustainability and capacity is our core functions. Evidence-based initiatives, group violence intervention, focused deterrence, cognitive intervention, and then neighborhood-based outreach and investment. And then strategic objectives, including community engagement, violence disruption, youth engagement, and policy advocacy, excuse me. And that's kind of how it sounds. We're talking about housing, and we're talking about gun better common sense gun control. I mean, as Chief Saluti mentioned, we got to do something with everybody having a gun, especially with our minors walking around with guns. Y'all would not have wanted me to have a gun at 15 years old. I don't know how that we got to do something about that because that is a cause to community violence. And then some of the initiatives that we're doing out of the office currently. Cognitive intervention, that's the adverse childhood experience training, grief and loss training that we're doing. We've wrapped that up and called it community mental health for practical community application trainings, just so that those in our neighborhoods that we've identified aren't freaked out by like the clinical terms. And so it's like, hey, this is just teaching us how we can walk through this, right? How we can look at what we've been through. Also the positive childhood situations that have happened. And so we have a consultant doing that for us. Focus deterrence is community navigation liaisons. I will tell you that us in the police department are looking at ways that we can partner to do full sail in a robust form of focus deterrence because there's got to be a law enforcement element in that for the services element to actually be able to fully give and have the results that are necessary in that. The neighborhood-based outreach investment, that's our neighborhood opportunity and community accountability pro council. It's our NOCAP group. Right now we're in Near East. It's identified through the stressor map and the GIS 911 calls. And that is the area also identified in strategic areas in the 2014 task force and the 2017 research that we got from New Chapter Coaching. Our key performance indicators, reduction of violent crime rates, increased community engagement and trust, and coordination of intervention, prevention, and enrichment programs. We're currently working with a host of community-based organizations here in Columbia. I won't do the call to action. That's it.
Okay, good. Comments, questions you want to address?
Where would restorative justice fall into something like this? Are you familiar with that term so it sounds to me like that may be something that would play into something like this?
Yeah, so restorative justice, that's one of the, so we rely on like the community-based organizations. That's where organizations like the Reentry Opportunity Center, where they work with reentry, those coming back, also with the Empower Missouri. They work with those who are, and the director there works with individuals coming back, also working with DOC to make sure they have their life documents and all that, making sure they can, if there's anything that can be expunged and all that, they partner with state agencies to be able to offer that to those working with probation and parole. And so that restorative justice piece will come in the coordination with entities like The Rock or Fresh Start and Powerhouse as well with Treatment Court and things of that nature with Commissioner Clevenger.
That would be part of the CBOs that you were talking about?
Yep.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I saw your presentation on Monday night. It was really well put. I did have another question. It passed me. Let me think of it again.
I have two. The first one would just be like, is it a little bit overwhelming to compete with a reduction in funding for after school programs at the same time? Okay, I'm like thinking of all of the youth, and then like they have to have something to do. I assume a city can only affect so much on some of those federally funded after school programs. Okay, that's what I was trying to think through.
You had mentioned the other night about this is a long-term plan for the, a lot of it is, and you had talked about, if you could again, talk about things that happened a while back that we're seeing the benefit of now. I remember you talking about that there was a group of men or CBOs that did some things that we're reaping the fruit of now. Could you speak to that again? I thought that was powerful.
For sure. So, and I want to say around 2002, I think she has documented, maybe it might have been 1997, but Mr. and Mrs. J's African American Institute was formed for what Stella Johnson, she's now passed on, but what she saw as an outworking with kids in the school system not being able to adequately read or write, and then what that started to turn into is behaviors, and then seeing also that work in the community. And so she built a program that was interesting. It was not just for the students, it was for the parents. So if the parents were going to bring their kids, then she was going to work with the parents as well as she worked with the kids. It's a fantastic program. Ms. Wanda Fay had the programs down at the Blind Boone Center. And so you had drop-ins, right? Parents could actually bring their kids down. They would do homework help. They would feed them. And you could have, they play video games and all that. And you had to stay in the center. You could not leave. And if the only way you could leave is if your parent gave you permission. And they acted as surrogate parents, right? They also did. So you had Blind Boone, or the High Steppers were in that. I don't know how Mr. Rowe's still doing that, but they were there. You had access to care and workforce development. And so they created these programs that, and we see Wanda Fay saying in 2009, she was worried about gang involvement. Well, they tried to silence Wanda Fay because no one wanted anyone to believe that there were gangs in Columbia. And Wanda Fay is like, y'all can silence me, but I'm telling you what's going on. And so they continue. There was Mr. Prince, who is dead now, but started sports leagues to engage the youth, to get them off the streets and having something to do, right? So we did football, baseball, and basketball. And so the midnight hoop. These were things that weren't just fun things to do. They were strategically created to stave off the violent crime that they saw happening in Columbia as it started to ramp up. And then 2016, there was a coalition built. They called it Community of Faith. Community of Faith has since been disbanded, but we have like four or five CBOs that have now been created outside of Community of Faith that came together because of gun violence during that time.
I'm going to do a sort of narrow question in a sense, but I'll preface this by saying one of my best friends way back in high school days once went to a war protest with a sign that said, withdraw U.S. troops from Nova Scotia, much to everyone's confusion. When I looked at the demonstration that was happening at the keyhole before the city council meeting, I was seeing signs that talked about the loitering ordinance and, oddly, one about no-mo zones. And then we were looking at a lot of things about the homeless. And it seems like there was a conflation of lots of things that, whether they're really related or not, is a little hard to say. I'll let you take a bye on the no-mo zones, unless you've got a strong feeling about it. But I am curious, because there's been so much call for loitering ordinances and cleaning out homeless camps. in the context of violence prevention. So I'm just curious about how you're seeing that and what you think needs to be done in Columbia, or, you know.
I think the unhoused situation with unhoused, inadequate housing is, I think if we're careful, if we make that a violent crime and unhoused conflation, we are going to step back from actually being able to bring adequate solutions, because those got to be separated, right? Those are not all. I don't know. I would like to see research on who's doing the causal research in that and the correlative research, because something happens and there happens to be unhoused folks there does not mean that they're causing the violence, and the violence prevention that we're dealing with is in pockets of neighborhoods. I mean, we can go walk down Quail Avenue or Quail Court. I don't know but Quail down there. I can tell you how to get there. We could go walk down Rice Road down to where it turns over to Hanover and see where we have those who are disabled population living in a place where they're right next to those who are who are living with three or four kids in the house. And so at Hanover Village, right? And so walking through there and seeing the pockets of, when we're talking about violence prevention, we're talking about wholesale root causes to violence. Now, can unhoused be a root cause? I think unhoused is a root cause to, we have mental health, we have a lack of access to resources, but I don't see unhoused being a root cause. Degradation is a root cause. Poverty is a root cause to violence, which unhoused can float in it. But as you can see, if we put all that together, we're not going to come to adequate solutions, because what's needed at McKee Street is not the same thing that's needed for those who frequent downtown looking for resolve and whether they want money for what a whole myriad of things. It's not the same issue.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
In my opinion.
Good. Yeah.
Are you familiar with the Center for Conflict Resolution in Kansas City?
I am not. I actually met someone from Kansas City that works in the mayor's office, and they're trying to start an office of violence prevention there.
Okay. It is just a nonprofit organization that's somewhat well-known nationally, and they are one of the groups that's teaching people the formal steps to do things like mediating transformative justice, where the store owner and the person who did commit the misdemeanor against the store owner can actually talk things out and establish a dialogue. Kansas City uses programs like that, and from everything I've read about these particular communications, I don't think we have anything like that going on here in Columbia. I was just curious if there were ever. The intent for additional restorative justice dialogue. That's what reminded me of it.
They mentioned the other night about getting you somebody else on your staff, and I just hope that happens. I hope it happens extremely quickly, because I think what you're doing is powerful, and I think it's going to be a huge benefit to our community. And I appreciate you being here.
Thank you for that.
Good. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much.
So you're very welcome.
And I'm so glad you're here. That's great.
Thanks for the invite.
I think we're getting an update on what we're doing with the annual report.
Yes. So it is that time of year again for the annual report. Mm-hmm. I'd like to have the draft ready in December. It would go before council in January, probably the second meeting of January, maybe the first meeting of February for the intro and first read. That way we capture any appeals that may come in December, potential appeals. So for November, I would like the board to think about any of the highlights you would like to add to the report, any of your activity. I know in the past we've added ride-alongs, we've added any presentations that you may have given, attendance to the NACOL conference. So if you want to consider any things that you've done throughout the year, this past year, that you'd like added to the report, I'll add those in, and I'll collect those from you by the November meeting, or at the November meeting. We can put it on the agenda for next month. So, and like I said, in the past, we put things as far as any ride-alongs that you've done with the police department. Have you hosted any work sessions or presentations, really, at this point? And then any attendance to the NACOL conference.
Okay, good. And if I heard you right, you're going to start with a draft, and then we can look at it and see whether there are things that we want to add. Is that the plan?
Yes, okay. Yes. So probably the December meeting, I'll have the draft prepared. And so at that point, the only thing that would probably need to be added are any additional appeals that would come through in December. But everything else would be for you to look at in December.
Good. Questions about that or comments? Steph, do you have anything to report from the Human Rights Commission?
Mine is very brief. I do really appreciate that DeMarcus differentiated that we know that panhandling is not actually related to gun violence typically, and that the more bright lights, young people, and officers who are around, the fewer people on the street you're actually going to find. They don't want anything to do with that noise. With everything terrible that has happened, a lot of our people on the street had an extremely rough weekend the weekend after. We had a guy with a few broken ribs, got kicked by the cops. He had a collapsed lung. There's a tube coming out. The nurses are watching that. They'll take his stitches out next week. We had someone who stated they were walking across 10th near Broadway on the edge of a group of students, and I believe this was homecoming weekend, and I guess an officer just pointed at him, started screaming, gave them a jaywalking ticket. Oh. And we had people who had like multiple trespassing charges like in the same day or the same weekend. I understand everyone is extremely frustrated right now. It was a very punitive weekend for the people at the very bottom rung of society, partially because of what happened.
Mm-hmm. I said here, yeah. I do not see members of the public to comment, so members, any members want to make a... Yeah, there was someone here briefly, but he left. Mm-hmm. Any members of the board want to make a comment? All right. Or staff?
I do have an announcement. So I mentioned that the group out of St. Louis was looking to put together a panelist for a roundtable discussion regarding Missouri oversight boards. So we did finalize a date for one of the first meetings, which is October 16th from 6 p.m. to 7:30 p.m., and it is a virtual meeting. So hopefully that makes it a little more accessible for people to join. I'll send out the flyer to everyone by tomorrow morning so that you have that. But we have four panelists on there right now, one from representatives from, of course, Columbia, Missouri. I'll be on the panel, St. Louis, Missouri, Ferguson, and Kansas City, Missouri. And so with this first roundtable, we'll kind of be giving introductions to the boards in our area and the history and the purpose and vision behind the board, so just factual information, as well as like what our duties are, what your board duties are. And then also some board duty highlights or board highlights that we had in our 2024 report. I did want to get your input on any future endeavors that you'd look to do, future missions or visions or things that you'd like to set your sights on. I know in the here the past year you've kind of focused on some training and education as far as understanding the processes for the police department. And of course, now we're hearing from the Office of Violence Prevention. I know the city manager has talked a little bit about maybe potential collaboration between the board and that office. And then, of course, attending the NACOL conference and any other things that you think the board will focus on in the future.
That's opening up a,
yeah, that's a broad question.
Rather large discussion, but and which we may not get in tonight, but... I, listening again to the comments of the board at the end of our last meeting, and I don't know whether this is an official thing or an unofficial thing, I think it is time for us to go talk to the city council about reversing the narrowing of our duties as much as possible. I don't know if that's a board action or whether that's an individual action, actually, but I'm feeling pretty strongly that we ought to get that reexamined. It'll be very interesting, Stephanie, I think, to see how other boards are dealing with the state laws that apply and all that sort of stuff, and how their bylaws and their rules have changed in response. But I thought there was a pretty strong feeling about feeling constricted about what we could do. So I don't know how you report that, so to speak, Stephanie, but I would be very curious to see how the conversation develops when the various boards describe how they're operating. So
I do also have a comment. I apologize. I wanted to, during Pride this weekend, we had, during the parade, I wanted to say that there were several officers that I saw that went above and beyond. So I didn't have an opportunity to stop and get their information, but the compassion they showed was appreciated. Absolutely. So I commend the officers for.
There's a lot of young faces, a lot
yes.
of new faces.
That's when, yeah. one of the things that gonna... stood out was yeah. the young faces.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I wanted to say thank you.
Thank I you had fun, and I saw a bunch of officers. I tabled a couple of booths. I do have one comment that's not that important. Peyton and I are both participating in Como Civic Academy. It's quite fun.
Oh, really?
Yeah. yeah.
Oh. There you go. Great.
Great. Como Civic Academy, I think this is only the fifth or sixth time they've had it. All it is a Columbia-specific 8-week civics course. Like, but it's all the most obvious stuff that we would want answered. And obviously, if more citizens were able to be more participatory, everyone would want to know this stuff. But yeah, week 3 is tomorrow.
Great. Wonderful. Anything else? All right. I do not believe that, unless somebody else perceives a need that I do not, we need a motion to go into closed session because we do not have any appeals before us. Actually, I'll pause a little bit because it might be of service to Stephanie and in a way to the staff in general. Are there things that people feel should be on the agenda for the next meeting?
Our last 10 minutes of conversation has given me two very large things to think about that maybe we could email you if we...
Okay. So we'll try to get some input that way. All right. Next meeting date is November 12th. And do I hear a motion to adjourn?
I'll make a second.
So move.
All right. All right, and I think this is a roll call vote, as I recall. So Stephanie will call the roll.
Anarchy, just let us leave.
Yeah. Yeah, all in favor, just to adjourn.
Okay. Oh, okay. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Well, that's right. Good. Yeah, it would be if we went into closed session, that would be the
exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Right. Okay, gotcha. All right. Well, thank you.